In the last year or so, the news has invaded our homes with images of carnage and destruction, with ISIS as they pushed through parts of Syria and Iraq, and even now they seem to be trying to push into Lebanon and Jordan. We've seen refugees fleeing from places, and the torture and the inhuman executions that have come about. And all of these things we see and we wonder, is the end coming? Is this the end? It may very well be. But we also know that there are things that still need to be coming. Wars and rumors of wars, of which these are certainly part of it. But Jesus here also is speaking to us as we look at this passage that there is to be destruction of Jerusalem itself. He's already told the disciples that there's going to be a time when not a stone, in hyperbole, there's not going to be a stone that is going to be left upon another stone. And that all is going to be destroyed. That Jerusalem is going to be besieged. And as we look at some of the other synoptic gospels, Matthew and Luke. And we see that there is a pattern that is set before us. Here in Mark, it's less obvious than it is in Matthew, but I believe that we see a section here which is specifically talking about what's going to happen to Jerusalem directly in about 40 years. And then there's a shift, and it is extremely subtle. As one commentator said, it's like you're out off in the plains, and you look at the mountains, and you see all these peaks, and they look like they're all one string of mountains. And as you get closer and closer, you begin to see that there's distance between them. And that's what we see here in Mark. That there is a distance between what is happening in the first section here of verses 14 through 18, verses 19 through 23. And we'll look at why that might be and such. But there is a prophetic, as we look at it closely, there is a prophetic perspective that looks and brings that which is later, and it looks like it's right there with us. And so we have two sections here. First off, dealing with Jerusalem. And Jesus tells his people that troubles will come, and they're going to come very soon. But there's also troubles are going to be coming, but they're going to come much later. And we need to look at these two sections and how they apply and how they interact with one another. In verse 14, we see, "So then you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet, standing where it ought not. And let the reader understand." Here we have Jesus, I believe, talking about that close range of mountains, as it were, that prophetic mountain range that's right up in the front. The front slopes, we might call it. And he's telling them, look, when you see the abomination of desolation coming, when you see it standing there, you know that the time is coming. And he's talking about the problem with regards to Jerusalem. In 70 AD, Jerusalem was destroyed. The Romans had surrounded it. They had broken through the three walls, eventually getting into the temple. And they were, as they destroyed the temple, they massacred, well, the estimate is somewhere around 1 million+. Somewhere in the neighborhood of 1.2 million people were massacred through that whole siege. And yet, the reference here is to the book of Daniel, which we have read. And as you think about, as we read there in chapter 11 of Daniel, the desolation, or the abomination that causes desolation. And in that case, it was Antiochus IV, Antiochus Epiphanes, who thought of himself as such a great and wondrous king. He was divine. And so he offered sacrifice in the temple because he was wanting to bring the Israelites into his kingdom of Greeks. And he was trying to defile all and to destroy all of their culture so that they would embrace Hellenism. And he sacrificed a pig on the altar there. And he put his own image into the temple. That's what Daniel is talking about. And even Daniel was a couple of hundred years before this actually happened. And that was the first time. And then we come here with Rome in 70 AD, the destruction of the temple and the taking away of the sacrifice and the removal of stones and the destruction of the temple area. And once again, we see as Jesus here is talking about this whole destruction, this abomination, because here was the name of God set upon this temple and they were destroying it. And desolation was coming as a result. And the problem was not that the Romans were doing something. It was that Israel themselves had turned from their God. Israel had abandoned their God. And we see how they had rejected Christ. And think of how he has talked to them even earlier that he was the cornerstone. And they had rejected him. And so in that sense, there was certainly an abomination that causes desolation. And so here was the second illustration of that to come. In this, here's the stones of the temple and it's going to be destroyed and things are going to be taken away and removed and there's going to be such mayhem and horror. This word here, destruction, carries with it the idea of making it a desert. In other words, Jesus here is trying to illustrate and show that there's going to be such utter destruction. Horrible destruction. And yet he calls his people to what? To flee. Look there in the latter part of verse 14 and then through 15. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let him who is on the housetop not go down into the house, nor enter to take anything out of his house. And let him who is in the field not go back to get his clothes. At the time of the destruction of Jerusalem, during that war that Rome was waging against Israel, because Judeans had revolted against Rome's authority. And they were finally trying to put them down. And there had been other difficulties and problems. And Titus finally had collected 6 legions. And they came against Jerusalem. They besieged it. And as those legions were coming up, the Jews actually fled into the city. The story goes, and we're not able to really establish it too much, but the story goes that was the same time at which there was a church that was established on the other side of the Jordan. And it would seem that the Christians heeded these words to flee. But they understood what was going to happen. And so when they saw this happening, they fled. And yet the Jews congregated into Jerusalem. Jesus here is telling his people that when they see this, when they see this problem, they need to run. Flee. Don't go back to your house. If you're on top of your house, they didn't have stairs from top roof in. The stairs were on the outside, or the steps, probably a ladder, so they would come down. Don't even bother getting into your house. This is how serious that Jesus is trying to say that this is going to be. You need to flee. Run. Take what you have on your back and go. Don't go in the house. If you're out in the field, don't pick up your clothes. Run. Get out of the way. Because this is going to be devastating. This is going to be horrible. And even in the midst of this, Jesus, his concern is even for the weak. Look what he says there in verse 17 and 18. But woe to those who are pregnant and those who are nursing babies in those days. And pray that your flight may not be in winter. Be careful. The care that he has for these women, the weaker sex. But they're going to be bogged down by children. If they're pregnant, they can't run fast. And so the whole idea is, woe to them. Help them. He's warning, giving this warning so that there can be preparation for when you see what is happening, get out of the road. And if you're pregnant and if you have little children, that you should be thinking about this even earlier and having some sort of a plan to be gone. Jesus here is not telling us that, you know, we have to stay right planted where he's put us. He's telling us that if there is something coming, we need to flee for our lives, to run. Because this is what he is talking about when, in terms of Jerusalem itself, this is going to be a devastating occurrence, a horrifying occurrence. We see the flood of refugees today, do we not? That they've moved into, well, a little nation in Lebanon, which had about 2 million population, now they got another 2 million refugees. Jordan, refugees. Turkey, refugees. And that's just to mention one particular area within our world, where there are many refugees. Sub-Saharan Africa, where there's Islam is also on the march, and people are fleeing areas. And we're called and told to be careful and to be concerned that God's people might not be caught up in the judgment that's involved here. For that is indeed what it is. And these things that are happening that we see that Jesus here is talking about in Jerusalem and its destruction in 70 AD, it's not like it's the only time it's ever happened. We continue to see these things happening even today. The tribulations that we see around us, just like we have the wars and the rumors of wars. This is sort of a continuation of those problems. But how does this relate to verse 19? And this is a little difficult. 19 reads, "For in those days there will be tribulation such as has not been seen since the beginning of the creation, which God created until this time, nor ever shall be." I think we need to look and realize that this was going to be such a great and problematic destruction. It was going to be a time in which things were changed radically. And it was bringing judgment upon those who had rebelled against God. The Jews. They hadn't learned their lesson from the exile. And they were being exiled in that sense once again. For you have destruction and such. But notice that last phrase there on verse 19. Nor ever shall be. And then go down to verse 24. But in those days, after that tribulation, the sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light. And then verse 26. Then they will see the Son of Man coming in the clouds with great power and glory. Notice that there has been a change in the focus. That while we were talking about something that was happening in the short future, now there seems to be something that's being talked about in the distant future. the destruction of Jerusalem was not as catastrophic as has ever been. It's not the most singular catastrophic event of all time. Think of what happened in World War II. In Jerusalem, there was something where a million plus people who were killed. Hitler himself killed something like 6 million. Stalin killed I don't know how many more. But in the 20th century, we saw horrific, horrible destruction of human life. World War II in itself. Think of the blitzing of starting with London, but then that was perpetrated upon Germany as a retaliation. The destruction of Dresden, the destruction of Berlin. And this destruction of Jerusalem doesn't match those two cities, let alone all the other ones that were destroyed. And so I think what we need to see is that 19 is kind of that verse that connects the first part, but yet at the same time it's pulling us to show us that there's a distance between and that there's something further out coming. As we see there in verses 24 and 26, as we see the coming, the literal coming of Christ being brought. In 26, the wording there is that it's immediately following this catastrophe. And so we need to see that there's this tribulation that happens that is related to this abomination that causes desolation. It's moved beyond what happened in 70 AD, and now we're looking at something in the future, even farther in the future. What would be our future as well? It's greater. And a destruction that is beyond our conception. And it's the judgment of God against all, not just the Jews now, but against all who would oppose him. And so we see that Jesus here is telling his people that troubles will come at the end as well. That there's a far distant, in terms of Christ, there's a far distant future that's there. But one of the things that he wants us to know is that God is still in control. Look there in verse 20. And unless the Lord had shortened those days, no flesh would be saved. But for the elect's sake, whom he chose, he shortened the days. Notice that God is the one who's in control. He has established and set the limits in terms of the time, and thereby he is limiting the destruction. He is saying, for my people's sake, I'm going to shorten this. Because this is going to be global, as it were, and they are going to be caught in the midst of it. And I need to protect them. God's the one who's in control. Whatever we see coming, however we understand it, and maybe even get caught up in it ourselves, we need to see that, A, we can flee, because we're given that permission in the earlier part, but that it is coming and we are probably going to be caught up in it somehow. And yet, to know that our gracious God and Father, he who has elected us, he who has chosen us, it's given twice there to show us the firmness of that, out of his great love, is still caring for us. He still is loving us. He's still in control so that he will not lose a single one of those whom he has called, those who are his own. He is the one who is in control of it. He shortens the time because he's the one who's in control. Remember in the book of Job, how Satan comes up to God calls him up to himself and says, have you considered Job? And the first time, what does he do? He says, you can do anything to anything that Job owns. You just don't touch the man. So he lost everything, including his children. The second time comes around, you can do anything to the man, except you cannot kill him. Notice that God is putting limits upon Satan in each of those instances. The same thing here. That God has made these plans and they're there, but he's put a limit on the evil that can happen. And we can take great courage in that. Great comfort in that. That yes, there may be difficulties, there may be problems, but guess what? Our God is true. And it won't get out of his control. Another thing we need to realize is this is coming, that there will be deceivers. Verse 21 and 22. Then if anyone says to you, look, here's the Christ, or look, he is there, do not believe it. For false Christs and false prophets will rise and show signs and wonders to deceive, if possible, even the elect. Think about that for a moment. There are going to be those who say that they are Christ. And the word here is pseudo-Christ and pseudo-prophets. In other words, there's going to be those who come around and say, look, here I am, I've come. And they are not. They are deceivers. They will somehow or another betray themselves because they will not be consistent with the scriptures. But they will bring such signs and wonders. They will be able to do things that we go, wow. To the point that they might almost be able to deceive the elect. It will be so good that people will just fall over it hand over fist. They will just tumble over it. They will just be totally taken in by it. The elect won't, but it will be so close that it will be almost possible. Which tells us that we need to be careful. We need to know our word. We need to know the Bible. We need to understand what it says. We need to understand it. We need to have it within ourselves. Because guess what? If we are ever deprived of our script of the word of God, if it's in us, they can't take it. We need to know it. We need to know it so thoroughly that it can be our comfort, our joy, our guide. We need to love it because it's the light on our path. But here it's going to be a light on our paths in a very, very dark, dark place. To meditate on it, to think of it. Because there are going to be those who are around us that, except for very little things, inconsistencies, they might take us in. Think of how the cults operate today. There are many cults. And some of them are so slick. And they've taken in a lot of kids, quote unquote, who are from Christian homes, but they don't know their word. They don't know the differences. They don't know and don't understand doctrine. And so this feels like it's such a warm, nice place, and they get taken in, swallowed up. They become deceived. And why is it? Because they don't know their word. They don't know God's word. Isn't it marvelous to have documents in which God's word is summarized in terms of the catechism, the confessions? Because they can be our lenses through which we can look and see what's going on. Some cults will deny the deity of Christ. Others will deny his humanity. And we know that it's not an either-or situation. Jesus has to be both. So that when they say one or the other, we can know that they're both false. Because we know the truth. It is serious. When Jesus here says, wonders to deceive, if possible, even the elect. We know that that's not ultimately possible because it is the Spirit who's going to work in the hearts of His people. But this is nevertheless a very serious warning to us as His people that this is what's coming. And then Jesus concludes this section by telling us, but take heed, see, I have told you all things beforehand. Think about it, what He has done. He is saying, look, I have told you. So our brothers and sisters in 70 AD, when they saw the Roman legions marching to Jerusalem, they fled. They got out of the way. He warned them, and so they acted. For us, the same sort of thing. He's warned us, and so we should be on our guard for all these things, for the deceptions that come, for the fact that there's going to be horrible times, difficult times, to be prepared. Because to be prepared is to be forearmed, isn't it? If we can know that it's happening, forewarned, we can do something to prepare for it. We have those in our society today, or we call them preppers, right? Because everything's going to fall apart. And to a certain extent, they're right. But when everything falls apart, even our preparations are going to be short. And so we need to be trusting our God and Him alone. Jesus here is telling His people to prepare themselves. But that preparation isn't that we have some sort of a food source, although that might be part of it. But our greatest threat is not the food supply. It's our own hearts with regards to those who would deceive us and turn us away from God. That's where the greatest preparation needs to be. To know God and to know Him more and more. Christ has died for us. Is He going to cast that aside? No. We can have that confidence that He is going to keep us and preserve us. He's warned us here. And He's going to help us, isn't He? Through the Spirit. But we need to understand. We need to have those things already in us so that when everything hits the fan, we'll be prepared and ready to continue to serve our God, to love Him and to serve those who are around us. Sometimes we might think that how horrible it is to be thrown in and cast into a prison. But you know what? There's been many Christians who've been thrown into prisons, and that's where their ministry became. It's not the end if we're prepared. It's not the greatest problem if we are prepared. The greatest problem is if we're unprepared and it hits us up across the, as we might say, up across the face. We are surprised by what happens. In the book of Revelation, John there describes the seven seals. And I believe the seals are a way in which it describes God's decrees that are what's going to happen through history. There's going to be these things that are going to continue on and they're going to happen through history. There's discussions about them, and the seals give us hints and clues as to what things to expect. And we come across the first four. And each one of those four, there's horses of different colors. And each one symbolizes something different. The first horse is a white horse. And the rider on the horse is got a crown and a scepter. And some people have said, well, here's Jesus Christ. And because it's a white horse. And I'm going, no, I don't think so. I believe what's there in that particular imagery is not Christ's victory, that comes in that chapter 19. What's there is the conqueror. War through history. The war between nations that's going on and happening. We come to another one. The next one is red. It's a red horse. And that particular horseman, there's all sorts of bloodshed, hence the red color. Violence, peace is taken and removed. Well, war brings violence and such, but it also brings peace eventually. Here, I believe what we have is the removal of peace is the civil war, where there's civil problems, where society is breaking down, where there's clashes within a nation. Then we come to a black horse. And he's carrying scales and crying out for barley and so much and wheat so much and we have famine. Natural disaster. And we need to realize that that's going to happen. And the last one is a pale horse. And that pale horse is basically disease and destruction through that. And if you think about it and you look at that, you can see all this happening in Jerusalem. Here was the Romans coming in as conquerors. And we can see the depictions of Titus and Vespasian bringing through the streets of Rome, the captives, but also the artifacts of conquest. There was horrible, divisional problems within Jerusalem itself during that siege. There were groups fighting against each other, not just the Romans. They were fighting against each other. They even burned up, according to Josephus, they even burned up their food supply. The fighting was so intense. And as a result, famine came. Disease came. And I think John is telling us that through all these forces, there's going to be this coming through all of history. And as he goes on talking about the rest of the seals and then the trumpets and then the bowls, we get more and more exact. But we need to be prepared because we have been forewarned. Not just here with Jesus and in this particular passage in Mark, but in other places. We need to see and we need to look at what's going on within our society. Where are the difficulties? Where are the problems? Where are the threats? Is there somehow pseudo-Christs, pseudo-prophets coming, showing great signs and wonders in our own day and age? I don't think they've happened quite yet. But there have been those who seek to destroy, don't they? To deceive, even to today. We need to cling to Christ. And we cling to Christ by knowing His Word and knowing who He is. He's the one who bought us. He's the one who saved us from ourselves, our own sinful hearts. And He's the one who has promised that He will keep us even through those times, that great tribulation. What wonder, what grace, what mercy of our God and King. Let us pray.